Hey guys, thank you for watching The Naturalist Capitalist. I'm actually mostly just doing a stream to let you guys know that Trent is alive. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I just did a live stream with Trent from the Redacted Caucus, I don't know, about, 2 hours ago now. And about 10 minutes into it, he had a seizure on the live stream. And so pretty shortly after it was obvious that he wasn't okay, I killed the live stream. And I just stayed on the line until he came back to and he was fine. But I honestly barely know Trent. I am in a group chat with him, but he's just been asking me to let him come on the show for a while. So, you know, I do that. I let people with smaller platforms come on just so they can get the word out, because that's what other people have done for me. But I really don't know him at all. So I didn't know who knew him. I didn't even really know where he lived. So I was freaking out because I'm first aid CPR certified, but there's not really that much you can do on a video call on the other end. So I made a bunch of phone calls that people gave me phone numbers to, and ended up getting a hold of people who knew him. And then by the time I actually got someone headed toward his house, he actually woke back up, and I talked to him and he was okay. But yeah, that was scary. It felt a lot like Ron Paul on the Liberty Report when he had a stroke. He had a Ron Paul moment, but it wasn't a Giuliani moment. It was the type of Ron Paul moment you don't want to have. But anyway, I'm doing a second stream tonight. And this is a guy that I've actually just gotten to know recently. And I just went on his show last week. I've got his show linked in the description. And I'm asking, please, that you don't stroke out on me or die or fall over or anything, because I'm terrified now. And I don't know if that's a side effect coming on this podcast, but we got Jose Gallus on. How's it going, man?
Dude, I'm going all right, man. I'm glad to take sloppy seconds here. I'm not going to complain. You know, I had to orchestrate some things to make it happen, but you know, here I am.
There you are. Yeah, man, that was the weirdest thing I've ever had happen during a podcast. I had a pretty weird podcast yesterday, but yeah, today's kind of blew it out of the water. But yeah, why don't you tell everyone about yourself? What is it? Let's see. Let's just start with your background. Where do you come from? What was your original philosophy, politically, religiously, whatever?
I mean, I'm 29, so I haven't had too much life, really, you know, to go too much into that. But I mean, I grew up and I wasn't like anything. I was just, I guess I could say it's more like, I could say in one sense I was a neocon, but in another sense more like a Fox News Republican. Like, I was a neocon in the sense that I supported all the things neocons supported, but it wasn't like I really overly thought of it. It was just more that, like, well, that's what Fox News said, so that's what we think, and just generally that's kind of where we were. And I mean, it was never something I thought about too much until I got older. And it was really the fact I have a commute that really started making me get more into that shit. We talked about on my episode that we had new. My episode's those, you know, look, and it's not released yet. It's on Patreon. So if you want to, I'll do my little grift thing. If you want to see the episode early, it's really bugging me keep not releasing it yet, because it was actually pretty kick ass. And I hate, that's one thing about recording early. Whenever you have a good episode, you're like, shit, I just want to release it. But yeah, it'll be released not next week, but the week after. So yeah, if you guys want that, patreon.com, just NoWayJose2020, and that's where it's at. But yeah, in that episode, we kind of talked about too how me and you both came from being atheists. And so, like, I came from that route. I was very grew up in a religious household. And, like, my first thing to go was my faith. Like, I lost my faith, and I lost my faith by, like, we talked about in our episode about how, like, I didn't want to. Like, if anything, like, I started looking more deeply into the stuff to reaffirm my faith. And I started looking from a logical way, and that's actually what got me out, because I started looking at debates and stuff and just seeing, like, the religious folks get trounced. And I mean, I know people are probably reading in the comics right now, but I don't care. I mean, it is what it is. But yeah, it's like I was seeing them destroy him. And even then, I didn't have a firm grasp on, like, logical fallacies and stuff. But I was a fairly smart kid. So, like, I kind of could tell, like, these guys, one of these people in this argument is grounded in logic and the other one isn't. And so from there, I started looking more into it to try to justify my beliefs, because I had family that would just, like, give me crap and make it seem like I'm an idiot for my beliefs or lack thereof. And so I started studying logic more, you know, logical fallacies, stuff like that. And from there, you know, that's kind of what set the groundwork later for me to go down this road of, like, becoming, like, a libertarian. And then the ultimate jump from minarchist to anarchist, because it's just, like, that's just, if you're a minarchist, you're already almost there. You just need to, you know, apply your logic all the way through. Just for some reason, you're allowed to have this cognitive dissonance where it's like, well, but this thing's okay. this one, you know, I don't have to apply my logic to. So,
right.
And yeah, I mean, that's basically it.
Yeah. So
my faith that went first and the rest fell after.
Yeah. I was, I became a libertarian pretty much at the same time I became an atheist, but I didn't become an anarchist till like four or five years after I became an atheist. I started questioning both statism and Christianity at about the same time. It was pretty much in like late 2013, early 2014. And I would call myself a small L libertarian by the time 2016 came around. I certainly wasn't grounded in the philosophy at all, but I was fiscally conservative, socially liberal, anti-war, anti-police state, all those types of things. It wasn't until 2021, really, like that I finally admitted to myself that I'm an anarchist. Did you hear any of that, or was that all?
I lost it for a second. I don't know what's going on. Lately, it's been doing this. I don't know what's going on my connection these days.
I'm going to be hypersensitive when you sound like you're stroking out because I'm going to think that you're starting to die on me. But yeah, what I was saying is I became a libertarian pretty much at the same time that I became an atheist, but I didn't become an anarchist till like four or five years after I became an atheist. What was the time gap for you? Like, were you still a conservative when you became an atheist and then you became a libertarian, or were they paralleled at all, or how did that go?
I mean, I don't necessarily recall them being too parallel, but so far my growth philosophically, like when in regard to like, you know, the legitimacy of the state or whatever, you know, libertarianism, I feel like that's, that kind of happened gradually and then all of a sudden. So like I kind of gradually went all the way to minarchist, like radical minarchist or whatever, you know, like just only the big three, the police, the courts, the military. And then from there, then it was like I made a huge jump from minarchist to anarchist because I was like sitting on the fence.
This is a pretty good point. I'm not sure how to answer that one. So I'll think about it. But
I mean, that's the whole meme of you know, how a whole religion was set up around some girl screwing around. So.
Man, you're going to get canceled by a lot of people. Not in this crowd so much, actually. They're used to it by now. The ones who can't handle it have left. So,
I guess it probably sort of moved along, and I would think there was probably something to that, that it moved along with it. Because, I mean, I think around the time I became an atheist, I was probably like a conservatarian slash like libertarian-ish, you know, somewhere along those lines, like a Ron Paul libertarian. I couldn't tell you exactly where I was along the journey, but I was moving that way. I mean, the biggest things for me in my life were like there were sudden jumps in my thoughts were theist to atheist and then the minarchist to anarchist. Those were probably the two most significant. Everything else was like gradually. Like even to my point in like religion to where I made that jump from theist to atheist, it was the same exact thing. It was slow and then all of a sudden. Because it was like we talked about in our episode, it was just kind of like you said that you kind of just slowly just were like, well, that's dumb. So now I'm going to find a way to justify that within my belief system. Oh, this is dumb. I'm going to find a way to justify this within my belief system. And then you get to a point where you're like, I'm justifying everything in this, like just doing complete backflips, trying to figure out how to make this work. And that's like not how logic works. Like, right. So, yeah. Jose, get out before Reed attempts to kill you. I think you're
good. Well, to be honest, like I thought if anyone would get struck down by God, you know, in this show, it would be me just because of all those things I say about him. But then this completely innocent bystander just comes on to talk about the Redacted Caucus and God takes his shit out on him. You know, that's not really fair. But
well, I mean, that's how they did Job. You know, they just fucked everything around. Yeah. It's kind of more messed up if you think about it. Instead of just killing you, just slowly kill everyone around you.
Yeah, can you imagine if you're like, you're a dad of like great kids and your wife says like, you know, I bet Jimmy really doesn't love you. And he says, oh yeah, no, of course Jimmy loves me. And she says, he only loves you because of all the stuff you give him. And then the dad's like, oh yeah, you want to test that theory? And then he like burns all his stuffed animals and like starts like making him sleep out in the coal shed and beating him every night. And then he still ends up loving him. And he'd be like, see, told you. It's like, oh wow, that's great. Like that's an inspiring story right there.
Not an abusive relationship at all.
So when it, like you were just saying, I mean, you just, I was just finding more and more that I didn't believe both with the state and with religion. And I was just like, no, okay, I don't. So for example, I was like, all right, no, we don't need the CIA. We don't need, you know, just like government program after government program. I was like, yeah, Social Security, like none of this stuff. This is all dumb. But I was keeping like the biggest parts, the biggest central parts of it were like, oh yeah, we still need that. I was doing the exact same thing with religion because I was like, okay, yeah, Noah's Ark, no, you know, 6-day creation, no, Tower of Babel, no. But I was keeping like the super central structure of it that I was like really scared to let go of that. And then you just finally get to the point where you're like, okay, the central structure is the whole problem. That's where all this bullshit comes from, both in the state and with religion. Was that kind of the realization you came to as well? Or
whether the central structure, I mean, I just got to the point where I'm just justifying everything. And it's like all these reasons why I'm like, well, this doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense. And I just apply it to the whole thing. I'm like, none of this makes sense. And it's like, I don't know, the more you analyze it, it's like, I mean, the way I look at belief is it's like, I'm not asserting I don't believe there's a God, or I don't think there's a God. Like, I'm not asserting there is no God, I guess is the way
right.
It hasn't met my burden of proof. And I've realized as time went on that I had a really shitty burden of proof before. Because it's like, I was just taking on what people told me. And the more I look into it, the more I'm like, none of this makes sense. And it's like, you know, I forget what the line is. It's what a crazy, what the fuck is the line? You said in your
episode. Oh, yeah. It's extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Yeah, and even that, there was like almost really very little to no evidence for it. So like, and the evidence that there is for Christianity is like tenuous at best. So like the more
I'm more open-minded towards someone telling me that there's a God than telling me that the government is going to function correctly. I don't know how you feel about that, but like when it comes to religion, it's like so abstract and so unknown on so many levels. Where if you're a statist still, it's like, how?
Yeah.
Like, how can you be?
I mean, it is easier. Cause it is funny how for us both, it was like, maybe it was because it's so much easier to let go of the the belief in state if you've already, like, let go of the bigger belief in, like, the God. Because there's so much more that goes into that. It has so much more implications for your life and afterlife and all that stuff than, you know, in a sense, I guess the state has more of a real world, you know, grip on your life. But for the implications of it, the theism, atheism thing has a whole lot more. So if you can let go of that, I feel like it makes it easier. But yeah, it is like that's definitely true that I can, because with like the whole government and that it working correctly, it's like there, I can literally just like logically break it down very easily of like why this is retarded. Like the incentives are all wrong. Like that was probably one of the biggest things for me is that the incentives problem. Like you look at just government as a whole, it's like, where are these incentives at? Like, the incentives are going towards shit. So it's like, you can see these small wins where, like, a lot of people are like, well, what about this guy? He changed his policy or he changed that or did this. But it's like, but if you look at the overall structure as a whole, the incentives are fucked. So, like, it's going to, over the long arc, go to hell. So it's like, it's not even like this guy did one good thing. Cool. Like, Ron DeSantis keeping it open, great. That's awesome. But you know what? If you look at the structure as a whole, the incentive goes the entire opposite way. He's an anomaly.
Right. So,
like, I don't know. It's the same thing. But then with religion, it is much more abstract. It's like you don't have this, like, I don't know. It's not as bulletproof. And also, I feel like there's a whole lot more cognitive dissonance that goes into the religion thing. So it's like, don't get me wrong. There's cognitive dissonance in the statism thing. But I feel like there's a lot more. Because with the religion thing comes like, oh, you're telling me that my grandma is isn't in heaven or whatever, you know, like shit like that. And there's just so much more to it. Like, I feel like the people's religion has a much bigger implication in their life than the state does in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously I'm speaking in broad brushes because there are people that's not the case at all. There are obviously those people who go to church once a year on like Easter Sunday and it doesn't mean a damn thing to them, you know,
but yeah.
At least that's my experience in life. That's how I was brought up.
So I think there's this narrative that if you're not religious, that you're more susceptible to the state. I don't find that to be true. I know plenty of religious people who are, they just like latch onto different parts of the state. They like to mix their religion with the state. It's not like they hate the state. They just want to use the state as an enforcement of their religious beliefs, or at least like their religious rituals or their religious sayings or whatever. And then in general, they seem to have this strange fascination with the military and the police, which is ironic. I don't see that as, you know, a biblical message, at least not in the New Testament. But don't you find that as a false statement that religion protects you from worshiping the state. I don't think it does at all.
I don't know. This is one that I used to be very much in the camp of, you know, because that was my angry atheist phase where I was just like, no, we don't need religion for anything at all. But I'm starting to kind of, I mean, I'm not even asserting one way or another. It's just been something I've been thinking about a lot lately, that there may be something too, because I do think that modern day religion, me and you, obviously, if we went into the Bible, we could totally pick it apart and show how this is not a good doctrine for liberty. But people have kind of twisted it in modern days to kind of be, and there are ways to interpret it in a way that is. So, like, look at, like, a lot of these, like, biblical anarchists out there. I mean, I've had one on my show, and they're able to, you know, kind of, because this thing is, when you're dealing with a book that's, like, thousands of years old and has all different books and just kind of thrown together haphazardly, you can kind of get to justify whatever the hell you want. So it's kind of almost like pre-packaged like ideology through modern day lens that you can get people to a similar conclusion as you. So I think there may be utility in that. I'm not sure. I'm very much up in the air. I'm not asserting one way or the other, but I think there may be utility in that. It's kind of like I don't know if it was me and you were talking about on our show, but I was kind of, the idea was like, if I can get you to the same conclusion, like, while I would prefer you came to that conclusion through logical means, if you came to it through illogical means, then I can work on that. But I would like to get you to the conclusion first. And if the quickest way to do it is through, well, Jesus said, or, you know, well, the NAP, or, you know, natural rights, or whatever thing it is, if that's how I can get you to the same conclusion that I'm at, like, we can work on how you got there later. Like,
right. So I'm not saying that you can't arrive there, because obviously you can. What I'm saying is I don't buy that more religious people are less susceptible to the state than atheists are. Like, I don't find that to be the case. For, I think, like, the split in the libertarian movement is actually pretty even. It seems like it's about 50-50. I don't really know. But the religious people I know, they're not anti-state. Like, I mean, they're, I don't think that because you worship a religious god that it safeguards you from worshiping things of the world, if you will. Like, I mean, they seem to do both still. And then a lot of atheists worship just worldly things like the state or scientism or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I definitely, my experience has been that religious people tend to be more statist. I don't know if they're more status than non-religious people, but I mean, it's hard to compare, because the thing is too, with religion, it's, or with statism in general, most people are statists. So it's like, it's kind of hard comparing it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how religion does to prevent that. It is kind of, there is some utility, I think, in, like, and maybe I've lost my faith in that a little bit, and utility in somebody having a higher power they answer to, because it, like, I mean, it's funny I say this, but in my head, I'm already preparing the argument against what I'm saying. But right. Like, fucking, you look at, like, the lockdown shit. Some of the best things have been the religious people, but in the same fucking breath, they have also been complete and utter bitches when it comes to it. Because I know when the whole lockdown stuff kicked off, I actually, like, I was, like, that was one of the times, like, you know what? Thank God for religion. In an ironic way, obviously. I don't believe in God. But because I was, like, expecting that it was going to be, like, mass, like, religious people would be like, fuck you. Like, no. Yeah. Like, I serve a higher power. And you know what? It's not you. So, but that did not end up being the case. I mean, there are some people you start to realize who are really about their shit. And I mean, like, a lot of Jewish people very much were. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag. I don't know. That is a question that I'm, like, go back and forth on. I can make an argument either way. I mean,
So I'm not, I'm not even saying that more atheists are less susceptible to the state. I just think it's a pretty even split. I don't think that is really any indicator of how anti or pro state you're going to be, because I've seen it go both ways. Like, I'm in Utah, the churches in Utah, like the Mormon community, they were total cucks on the lockdowns and on not going to church on Sunday, all that type of stuff. Like, they just bent right over. And the biggest advocate of opening up and letting people worship as they wish was the guy who was in that video I sent to you, John Molnar, who ran for Congress. He's a staunch atheist, and he was the one who was speaking out about how unconstitutional everything was going on with the houses of worship. I think that you know, the problem isn't necessarily like religious texts or believing in a higher power in a religious way. I think the problem is trying to remove your thought and your theory and your logic and place it on something else to decide it for you. I don't think that's good. So if it's the state, if you're just letting the state decide what you're allowed to do, what's safe, what's going to be good for the environment, what's going to impact society in a successful way, that's dumb. And then if you're doing it with a religious text that's 4,000 years old or whatever, you know, okay, that's dumb too. I think that, you know, 4,000 to 2,000, you know what I mean? Like the Bible has been written over a long period of time, but whatever text you're ascribing to, if you're letting it replace your thought process, that's what I think is bad. Like, I don't expect everyone to be an atheist. I don't expect everyone to arrive at the same conclusion that I do. I think that theists should exist and that people should believe there's a God based on, you know, their own journey or whatever. I just don't like it when people remove their thought process and their critical thinking and place it on something else.
Yeah, if you can find a way to somehow, at least in your way, logically come to that conclusion, great. I mean, it's the logic that matters to me the most. I mean, I know, like, I've been a big fan of, like, Vin Armani this year and how he's going on about, like, the magic and stuff. But at the same time, it's like, I would prefer I don't have to use, quote, unquote, magic. I would prefer I could get you there through logic. But, I mean, we know that human beings don't necessarily always work that way. As much as we love Tom Woods, like, he's more just preaching to the choir. How many people who weren't already in that, like, framework of thought really convinced by charts and graphs? I mean, to some extent, the magic, religion, you know, whatever it is, you know, whatever that thing is will bring you there. It may help bring you there more. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what the way is going forward, but that's why it's kind of getting at that. I care more that we get to the same conclusion. And then we can work on, you know, how you got there. That's not at all to say how you got there doesn't matter. I actually think it matters a lot. Because right. I do think, like, you're getting at that if you can come to the same conclusion as me, but you come to it through, you know, appeals to authority or whatever, then, you know, what's going to happen when you get a different appeal to authority? You know what I mean? Like, there's a good chance you're just going to go that way. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I don't know. I'm like kind of saying a whole bunch of nothing, but at the same time saying something because I can kind of see both sides of the issue. But that's just where I'm at these days. If we can get the same conclusion, it's awesome. But I mean, if we can't, like, I mean, if like, I'd rather get you to my conclusion, and then from there we can maybe work on the process that got you there. So
I agree. Like, yeah. In this time with how weird things are, that as long as we're fighting against the same thing, we're good. Like, I'm cool with anarcho-communists right now, like actual anarcho-communists, not mm-hmm. not statist communists. They can fuck off. But like people who actually don't believe in a state and they want to fight the same power structure right now. Sure. Like I look at them as being on the same side. But I think going forward, it matters how we try to get people to think, you know, because in order for them to arrive at the right conclusion, you want them to think in a critical way. Because even if you can get them on your side right now, like if this tribalistic, dumb, propagandized thinking continues, then it's just going to be another door for something like what's going on right now to happen again. Because I really believe that we are where we are now because people don't think for themselves. They just think whatever CNN or the church or the state or whatever tells them to do. There's very little critical thinking and questioning going on.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, it's as much as people joke nowadays, it is the consistency that's a problem, you know, but and I know there is something too that it's like people aren't consistent. So to some extent, you got to utilize a little Bernays sometimes to get what you want. And I've embraced that more this year in that I think sometimes with messaging, you know, we need to be, you know, take that in mind and realize it's not always going to be the logic that gets them where you want to be. And it doesn't mean you have to lie to people. But I do think there is something to embracing the magic, if you will, and, you know, playing upon those things to get people where you want them to be. And, you know, just the whole, like I said, Bernays, like propaganda, like learn. I feel like we need to learn that shit more. And if you're coming from a place of logic and you're utilizing those tools, I feel like it's more appealing than someone who's not coming from a place of logic and using those tools. So I think we have the better message, but we're, and sometimes I think we're far too focused on being the being consistent or being fucking being the logical ones, which don't get me wrong, that is fucking great. But, you know, that's just not how people are convinced. Sometimes it's better to make the emotional argument, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think in the short term, the emotional argument is good. I just think in the long term, we should be pushing for logic, because the entire reason that nobody cares about anything is because they've thrown logic out the window. So I think we need to bring logic back into the conversation and try to get people to think consistently again.
Because, I agree. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but the thing is we can have both. And the thing is, like, if we can utilize both, the other side only utilizes one. So we win. Like, there you go. But if we're only focused on logic, it's like, we're going to fucking lose. It's just, that's it. You know, like, I mean, maybe not. I think there's some sort of demonstration that you can use to show in real life, but we'll have an easier time winning, I think. Because I think in the end, it'll move towards liberty, you know, overall.
But, oh, yeah, no, if you can scare Republicans into being libertarians by just talking about how the Republicans are really going to take your guns away and, you know, they don't care because, or whatever, like, as long as, I mean, if you can scare them into liberty, cool. Or if you can trick them into liberty or whatever, as long as they're in liberty for now, it's important. But I agree with you. Like, you can use both. I just think the long term, we should really be trying to get people to think again. And maybe again's incorrect. I don't know if they ever have, because there's been crazy propaganda all throughout history and people have done all sorts of stupid stuff all the time. But I just really believe they do stupid stuff because they don't think and because they're not trained to think. So I think critical thinking in the long run is actually more important than tricking someone into liberty. Like, I think that's a very temporary win.
Yeah.
I think in general, we've just got to get people to open their eyes.
Yeah, I mean, to add to what I was saying is I wasn't trying to be dismissive of Tom by any means. I said he's only preaching to the choir, but I actually think you're right and the logic is important. And I think preaching to the choir is an extremely important thing. Because, you know, we can have our, you know, no name comes to mind off the top of my head, but maybe you could say Vin, although I don't know if he necessarily has utilized the magic he talks about too much in trying to, like, you know, kind of do like propagandize or emotionalize people towards liberty. But then once they get here, you've got people like Tom Woods who can give you the facts, can give you the shit you need to strengthen your belief system that you already have. So, because it's like, I do think there is something to, like, this, like, bringing people towards us. I don't think the logical argument necessarily always works. It doesn't mean it doesn't ever work, but I think the more appealing argument is using, like, emotional arguments. Like, instead of being like, you know, say with, like, the welfare shit, like, when people bring that up, instead of saying that, like, instead of coming from the point of, like, well, these motherfuckers need to work, you can come from the point of, like, hey, this is why I think under a, you know, anarchist system that they would actually do better or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm doing it because I care about them. I'm not doing it because it's like, fuck them, you know? But someone mentioned Eric July. Eric July is a good example of, like, kind of what I'm getting at more, I guess. He does a lot more of that, working with the culture and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, like, people like Tom Woods and people, the people who are the facts, logic people, they're extremely important because, like, you're, like, it's kind of like you might be able to get someone to your side, but are they going to stay? Right. Are they going to have a good, solid, logical, like, process they use? Like, I mean, we need people like Tom Woods, you know, to fucking do shit like that, you know, to, like, strengthen, like, through logic, their belief system. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to switch topics a little bit. You have seen Liberty Unity in action twice in, like, the last couple of weeks, a little bit on yourself and then a little bit on Nick Ashley. So you were one of the guys that was like, Lib Unity's fake and gay. And now you're like, well, it's gay, but it's not fake. So
here's my take. It's Liberty Unity is simultaneously fake and gay and base and awesome. It's a semantics game, which it's a, I mean, if we can reclaim the word, then cool. But I think unity has some connotations of compromise, which I'm not all about. And I know some people mentioned, like, the Sal and Mises stuff earlier, and I know why they're bringing it up. Because what I'd call, like, a non-voting anarchist. I'm more of a small L libertarian. I don't necessarily agree with that path. So I'm, in some senses, I'm more of a fan of, like, the remnant approach. And mm-hmm. But I do think there's a place for it. So I'm not as concerned with unifying with everyone, but I am still concerned. But yeah, it's a semantics thing, I think, because depending on your implications when you hear unity. So I think some people hear unity and hear one thing, and other people hear it and hear another thing. I think it's Frederick Douglass that said, I would unite with any man to do good and with no one to do wrong, something along those lines. That's kind of where I'm at with unity. For anyone's fan of Stirner, it's union of egoists. Like, I will unify you with you when it's something I agree with, but as soon as you don't, I'm like, I mean, like our agreements in no way buys you any favor with me with our disagreements. It's kind of where I'm at. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what it was all about. It was all, I mean, I think people should listen to like who is actually pushing it, because a lot of people say like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to unify with what's his face there, Richie Castaldo. And I'll say like, okay, I have not seen him say anything about Liberty Unity. I've never seen him hashtag it out. Never seen like Nick Sarwark or Andy Craig, any of these people that are doing nothing but hurling grenades at anything that's happening. You know, they don't push Liberty Unity at all. It's me, Dave Smith, Jeremy Todd, David Fite, you know, people who kind of actually want to make things happen. But
example. I want to provide a good example of what you're getting at. Fucking, I don't remember what Dave tweeted, but he tweeted some shit about like Sarwark at some point, something like nice. And I can't remember what the exact situation was. Then Sarwark came back with some snippy shit. I think Dave's tweet had something to do with Unity. And like Sarwark came back with some snippy shit. And we actually towered here in Tower Gang. We towered Dave when he did that, because we're like, that's fucking gay. Why is he like being like that to Nick? But then when Nick came back and was a bitch to him about it, it was kind of like, oh, that's why. This is a perfect demonstration of who is concerned with Unity and who is not.
Right.
Sarwark is the time. He's kind of what I was getting at in our conversation. Like people who kind of claim they want Unity and then don't really. Because like Sarwark would be the same type to be like, oh, look at this person, you know, dividing the party or whatever, you know, like the Dave people or whatever. But then Dave is the one reaching out and then getting his hand slapped away. So,
Liberty Unity, like, and Dave and the few other guys and I, like, were the ones who started it really. And we were talking about it when we first started pushing it. And we made the point that if nothing else, this is actually just going to be a great tool to expose the bad actors, because mm-hmm. he's out there saying, look, I'll unify with anybody to do these things. And it's been very obvious who's been willing to accept that olive branch. And, you know, like it's been extremely revealing, because in my opinion, you know, at least to new people to the party, like it wasn't super obvious. There was just a bunch of mudslinging. And so if you just came in and you just saw this crazy fight, you're just like, what the hell is going on? So then if you have this obvious thing you can center around, be like, hey, this is what our goal should be. And then it's obvious who's picking up that torch, who's going with it, and then who's being a detractor and who's, you know, just being a bitch. Then, you know, it kind of serves its purpose.
Yeah. And I can see how it can be confusing to the outside onlooker, because I'm not a Mises Caucus guy, but I'm pretty much like all my homies are kind of deal. Like I told you, I'm not a fan of like working within the political system. I have my reasons. I'm going to talk tomorrow on why libertarian, why, but I'm not concerned to go into deep thing of that right now. We can later if you want. But so I hang out with those people all the time, and it's like, I completely lost my fucking thought process.
You were saying that you're not part of the Mises Caucus, but I'm assuming you're about to defend them in some way or something. But
oh yeah, yeah. My point being is, because I kind of run in those circles. Like those are all my homies. Like I'm kind of like philosophically all in the same thing. I just have a different opinion when it comes to strategy. But yeah. From the outside looking in, I could see how people would be like, look at these fucking assholes. Like Dave Smith's a dickhead. Blah blah blah. But it's because we're the superior fucking shit talkers. So, like, it's like you see someone coming in. It's like, it'd be like if there was you walked into a fight and there's this 200-pound dude who's yoked beating the shit out of this 120-pound guy. It's kind of like, well, that's kind of fucked up. But it's like, you don't know what happened beforehand. It's right. Just that in this situation, like us of this, like, ilk are the 200-pound yoke dude. And these fucking losers are the 120-pound dudes getting their ass kicked. But what you don't know is that they did some fucked up shit before you walked up, you know? That's kind of where I'm at with that, you know?
Yeah, I think what Dave has realized, and it's something that we tried to get him to realize, and he's said it on Josh Smith's show, and he said it other places, that these people are insignificant, a lot of them. Like, they don't have an audience. They're just griping. Like, I'm already way bigger than most of them are, and I've only been around on Twitter for, like, a year. And, you know, like, they're just little griping bitches. And if you engage them, you give them what they want, first of all, because they're trying to get a reaction out of you. They kind of just live to oppose you and get your reaction. And then you're also giving them a platform because, you know, as I said, they don't have any audience. So if you're a guy who has 100,000 followers and you engage in all these dumb fights with them, you're just elevating them more than you need to. And it also just makes you look petty because you're bothering to fight with them. So he's really moved beyond that and gone to more of a, you know, focusing on the big picture, trying to create bridges where it's constructive. I think that's the way forward for sure.
And to be fair to like Dave and like shit, I can completely get where it's coming from, because it's like, I know how it is when anyone fucks with me, even if they're like an insignificant 5-follower fucking dude, I'm not gonna lie, it bugs me to my core to just let it go. Like, I don't know if this is a libertarian thing or like just, or what, if we just like to argue, but just in my head, I'm gonna be like, oh my God, I want to fuck this dude. Someone's gonna clip that out. But yeah
we got most of the Tower Gang watching, so they're probably gonna clip it, but
that'd be a good one. I can use that as my intro. But yeah, no, I can see like why it's so hard to just let shit go, but sometimes that's tactically the best thing to go with. Like, for example, you've probably seen the Ace Arcus debate with Kevin Cassidy, where it wasn't even Ace, it was fucking Pulpo and just like trolling him. Like, sometimes that's appropriate. Sometimes just either ignoring or even clowning them is appropriate, to be like, you're not worth my time.
Right.
And I understand his initial, and I actually agree with the initial, like, engaging, because sometimes it is appropriate to engage. Like, you don't want to completely ignore him, but there comes a point where you're like, all right, we got to ignore him. And I don't know. And I think there is something, like, say, with people like Power Gang, like, we kind of always fuck with Star-Lord, and we kind of make his existence an internal fucking ratio. And I think there's some utility to that as well, but I think that's like where we fit in the market, if you will.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, that's Tower Gang's place for sure. Like, that's what Tower Gang should do. Like, not Dave. Like, if Tower Gang is doing that, it's perfect. Like, that's what they exist for. So.
It's kind of what I was getting at. It's like, it's not, I mean, we're just fucking around. We're nobodies. It's not really giving them a platform, if anything. But even then, the platform we are giving him is like a, ha ha, look at this retard. That's all it is. But when Dave stoops down to their level and like tries to have some sort of actual legitimate debate with him, it's kind of like it has that effect you were getting at, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I had a question, but I actually just forgot what it was. So I'm going to try to pivot. I think that, you know, it's like we're the scenario I try to compare it to is like we've already gone off a cliff in a truck that has a parachute we can deploy, but we're arguing over whether or not we should have the windshield wipers on as we're like plummeting toward the earth. And it's like, guys, I mean, like, you know, we've got to unify and focus on the big picture item. So picture there's like 4 of us in the truck. And so 3 of us decide like, okay, you know, we're going to deploy the parachute. And then that one guy is like, no, we need to turn the high beams on. And he's going to try to obstruct you from deploying the parachute. Like, even though he's sort of on your team and you all want to survive going off the cliff, at a certain point, if he's not letting you get to the parachute, you've got to punch him in the face and knock him out or whatever so that you can deploy the parachute. So if you're going to continue to be a bitch, fuck, cuck, as I said on the Tower Gang podcast, like, sorry. I mean, you're an obstruction. So it's not even that we're going to try to purge you. We're just going to outgrow you and plow through you and work around you. And that goes for either side. Like, if there's some Mises caucus guy who hates trans people or something and is like 100%, you know, I don't know, like just against, you know, that's his number one issue. And he's not going to let anything else fly. Like, okay, well, sorry, dude, you know, you're not on our side anymore. Like, once you put dumb shit over extremely important priorities, you're not a team member anymore.
Yeah. And there are certain people I want them to make them uncomfortable to call themselves libertarian. Cause like, while I may not engage in the party side of things, it's still like people associate me with that. And that's not what I want to be associated with. I want certain people, especially dishonest dishonest fucking actors. That's what I was looking for. That are fucking doing. I want them to, you know, embrace what they really are. Be centrist. Go fuck off. Go stand for nothing. That's great. Just, you know, get away from us. I don't care. Go do your thing elsewhere. Like, but this is not the place for you. Like, I have no problem making those people feel uncomfortable. And I think sometimes, though, it's just we got to be careful in picking our targets. And even in this my episode, I kind of like, I've been like kind of kicking around the idea of maybe like a green pill. Because there are people who, like, we will just like, you know, dismiss them as being blue pills or whatever. But I do think there's something that we need to identify, be able to identify people who are just new or learning or on their journey, and, you know, make sure we're not picking them out and just destroying them. Because while there are people I think are actually fucking important to, like, I think it's good to fuck with some people to kind of essentially, you know, what's socially ostracize them. Like, there are some people that's great. I'm all about it. But there are, you also need to be careful in picking who you do that to, because I think there are some people that you need to realize, like, no, they're coming around to your way. You just need to be a little bit more patient or work with them and not just blast them. You know what I mean? Like, so it is kind of a hard thing. It's a tactics thing. I think it's very important. I've kind of started thinking about that more lately because we've been putting a lot of people in blast, and I've noticed there are some people, for example, the Ricky Herrington thing the other day. Like, I think Ricky Herrington, from what I've seen, I would consider him maybe like a green pill, and like to some extent, and that I think he's kind of red pill, but I think he's coming along. I think he's moving that way. I think he's still a little bit set in his ways, because you kind of saw him read about the racism thing with the Mises cocky shit. But he seems like a good guy, and I do think he deserves some respect. He deserves respect. He doesn't deserve to be dismissed. So I think there is something to, like, my idea that I'm kind of coming up with like the green pill, and like identifying people within that blue area that we really they're workable. Like, you should be like, should approach them a certain way and not just fucking be dicks to them, you know?
Yeah, I think the problem with the red pill, blue pill dichotomy is, you know, you start, then you only have two groups that you're putting mm-hmm. people in. And I don't even think like the green pill is necessarily the other group. Like, there are people, I think red pill, blue pill might be like extremes. And then you have people, it's a sliding scale. So you can be like purple pilled. You can be kind of in the middle. Like, you know, I would not put Nick Sarwark and Justin Amash at the same spot. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think they're the same type of person. Like, Justin Amash might use language that's within acceptable opinion more than I would, but he's not someone who's going to demonize somebody who uses different language. And he also definitely detaches from bullshit that the state tries to push and pushes some messaging that's very outside of normal occasionally, you know, like Nick Sarwark, you never see him do that. And then, you know, like Alex Jones and Tom Woods are not the same person either. Like, yeah. you're talking about something completely different. So I just think the red pill, blue pill makes people think simplistically.
Oh, I agree.
And I think it's a good analogy for the most part, but people will be like, oh, is he red pilled? Oh, he's not. Okay, fuck him. And then it's just like, there goes your conversation. It's dead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think people, we tend to like give Republicans and Democrats shit for being simplistic thinkers, but I think sometimes we're some of the worst binary thinkers of all. Because you know, you've seen this past year with the fucking private company bro, like,
yeah,
shit like that, like, you know, blue. I mean, I did an episode with Clint on the clear pill, which is kind of because the whole black pill, white pill thing is another perfect example of this binary shit. And I think this black pill, white pill thing is kind of almost a leftover from our like 12 years of propaganda that we all engage in and getting fucking this nationalistic fucking shit driven into us. It's not going to be good everywhere. It's just not. This whole black pill, white pill thing, I think, is like a bit of a misnomer. Like, that's why I like the idea of the clear pill. And just like, it's like, that's realism. Like, there's going to be places that are fucked, and there are going to be places that are good. And even then, within those places that are fucked, you probably can maybe make your life a little bit more bearable if you can't necessarily get to the places that are going to be good. But obviously, that's ideal. Like, I think we need to be looking things through clear eyes and not these. I mean, there is some utility in like labels and grouping things. At the same time, I think we just end up falling to this trapping of this 0-1 thinking. And I mean, like, because we are so used to being like, does it break the NAP? Does it not? Like, sometimes it's not always that simple. Like, with the private company bro argument, it's like, you could be a mom-pa company that's getting kickbacks in some way from the government. Does that mean technically you're not entirely a private company? And then on the other hand, you have the big giant corporations that are getting a shitload of kickbacks from the government, and they're definitely not a private company if you look at it. But it's like, those are both examples of gray. Like, that fucking, that little mom pop place is like a light gray. And then that fucking corporation is like a dark, dark, dark charcoal gray. You know what I mean? Like, it's not always zeros and ones. It's just not. I think we need to learn to think a little bit more nuanced in some ways. It doesn't mean letting go of principle, but it's just knowing that it's not always black and white, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think principles actually enable you to think with nuance, because if you don't have principles, you need black and white to stay centered, because otherwise you're clueless. Like, if you have something that hones you in on true north, then you can see what's like north by northeast, north by northwest. You can base everything off of that, and then you actually have nuance. It's when you don't have that you have to be incredibly simplistic to find your way at all.
I just think too many of us fall into the trap of just being like, instead of, the, you know, are we 5 degrees north by, you know, east or whatever, but they just go, no, are we north? Are we south?
Right.
And it's like, it's not as simple as, did they break the NAP? Is it a private company? Sometimes within that, it's a little bit of a gray area. I mean, shit, like any of the big thinkers will tell you that. Rothbard, I'm sure, I can't think of a quote off the top of my head would say that. I know Konkin would. That was a big thing with Konkin, is he focused on the whole fucking private company, public company, like dichotomy. That was a big part of his thinking. Rothbard did the same thing. I know a lot of people accuse Rothbard of not doing it, but no, Konkin put more of an emphasis. But Rothbard definitely did bring it up. That's for damn sure. So, but yeah, I just think sometimes we just need to elevate our thinking, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we saw it both with the water fountain meme and with Justin Amash talking with AOC. Like, there was so little friggin' nuance in both of those instances. Mm-hmm. Like, people were just like, they were just dumb. I mean, I guess I know Twitter sucks as a medium to discuss like anything with any amount of nuance, but still, it was just like, holy crap, guys! Like, can you think outside the box at all, or are you just completely constrained by, you know, your emotions? But for the end, I wanted to talk about your show. How long has your show been going? What inspired you to start it, and what do you try to do on it?
My show's been going around for about 6 months. I think episode 52 is my last episode. I first started, and it was an outgrowth from this like Facebook group we had called the Liberty Movement. And we were like the whole mission there was we were trying to do like a cultural, non-political, liberty-minded space. Cause that was in our head, that was our way to unify people. I still believe in it in some sense. And, I haven't been doing as much as how much time. But that was where it grew out of, and that we started a YouTube channel where it was going to be like a rotating cast of shows and that shows that fit that bill. So like we wouldn't be focusing on political stuff. So it'd be like, say there was some guy up there that had a fucking, you know, a sports show, you know, like he wanted to do a weekly clips, and he just so happened to be a Liberty guy. He didn't even have to ever go into it. It was just supposed to be a spot where, like, you know, we could have that, you know, where we could have, say, sports without being fucking inundated with, you know, propaganda bullshit, you know, and just other stuff, something along those lines. Like, we had a movie review on there. I just recently stopped doing it because it's not the time. If anyone listening and wants to, and is something they'd like to manage, hit me up. I did a whole episode on that recently because I'm looking for someone to take it over. But anyways, yeah, it came out of that. I started doing that show, then I made my own show to support that channel to kind of, you know, get it off the ground. And then after a while, I kind of realized that, like, I didn't only want to talk about cultural, non-political content. And so then I like created my own channel, and I would like do like half and half. So I would do like one episode. I might do like an episode on like comics, and everyone can see the comics behind me. And then like in that same week, I might do an episode on, I can't even think of something, but something political or something that wouldn't be considered something I'd want to put on the other channel. And then after a while, I mean, that's kind of what it grew out of. And then I just now recently, I kind of got to the point where even now I'm like, shit, like I don't always want to like pigeonhole myself to only doing it like that. So now I just can't do whatever I want. But there are a lot of episodes that are like all over the place. Like I've done episodes of comics, manga. I've done all sorts of other weird shit. But that's kind of where I'm at. I just like to talk about whatever I want to talk about. To get an idea of what I do, I've been my biggest influences in my thinking have been Dave Smith and Pete Muniz. So, I mean, you can think of me as like a shitty version of the two of them. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Sound kind of based, actually.
Yeah, no, they've definitely both had big influence in my thinking and big. I've had Pete on my show, never had Dave. I'd love to have Dave on sometime, just because the fact that it's like, I mean, it was surreal having Pete on, and so it's like, it's, I don't know, I'm not one of those people that normally has like heroes per se, because it's like it's kind of gay, but but at the same time, there are people that you like really look up to, and you're like, you know, there's kind of fangirl like. For example, I got fucking Phil Labonte coming on this week, my show, which that's another thing. If you want to get early, go on Patreon, because it's going to take a while. And I was like super stoked about that, because like I listened to his fucking Fall of Ideals album for like a whole goddamn summer while I was just fucking being a deviant and, you know, just railing pills and fucking doing crazy shit high school kids do. So it's I don't know, it's something, it's surreal getting to talk to some of the people I talk to, because these are people, I was a big podcaster and stuff, and I just weird having all these people. But yeah, no, I'm rambling now. But yeah, that's my show. It's through the fuck I want. I'm like at 50-ish episodes. I like to think I'm fairly decent. It's the No Way Jose, if I haven't mentioned it already. But yeah, it's on YouTube. It's also everywhere audio podcasts are at. I think I answered the question, and it's just rambling at this point.
Yeah. No, I think I've seen, I watched your episode with Clint from Liberty Lockdown. I've had him on my show. Mm-hmm. I've been on his show. And yeah, I like seeing people who, you know, I mean, everyone has a show, but if you can't get anyone on your show, then, you know, why do a show? Like, if you don't have anything to say, and if you're not interesting, like, don't do one. But if you are interesting and you have stuff to say, do one, because you never know where you're going to get. Like, I'm someone who can attribute to that. Like, I was nobody in the Liberty movement like 4 months ago or 5 months ago, but here I am now. Like, if you have something that you think is a new perspective or something that people can resonate with, or just something that's not being talked about much that you think needs more attention, just go for it. But yeah, I've got your YouTube channel linked in the description and your Twitter bio so people can follow you there. But yeah, thanks for coming on, Jose. I'll just give you the last word and then we'll kill the stream.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. It was super awesome and really nice, really awesome getting to know you, because like I said, my perception kind of changes. We really hit it off. We have a lot in common, like a lot. Like me and you talked, are pretty much our origin story is almost essentially the same in a lot of ways. I know you kind of brought the podcasting thing. There's a reason I do interview shows, because I'd like to think sometimes I have important shit to say, but I generally try to bring on people that have important shit to say. And then, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess if you've literally nothing to contribute whatsoever, then maybe don't. But I mean, I guess I kind of have a little bit of something, and then I just pepper that in with other people's perspective and they kind of mix. But really the key is having good guests that have interesting shit to say. Yeah. And also there's something to catching people that you could have a good vibe with. Because it's not like, I know a lot of people accuse some podcasts of being clout chasers or whatever. There are some people who do that. But I genuinely am just looking for people that I feel like I would have a good conversation with. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, like, well, you're picking this guy as a shitload of followers. But it's like, well, there might be a reason they have a lot of followers. Maybe there's someone you could have a good conversation with. Like, you don't just magically get to be big shit. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I know a lot of people might accuse like people like you or Clint of like just getting it all from fucking Dave, but there's a reason why Dave wanted to talk to you. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's something there, and a lot of people are like, we're kind of all riding each other's wave to some extent, you know, like, yeah. Sure, we'll probably get more followers from this, but you know what? I mean, you know, the rising tide raises all ships. I'm all about doing the same thing. So
yeah. You know? 100%. I just want to say, go follow this guy too, Archaic Skids, and he is right. The stash is the biggest attribute to my rise. But he's another guy who, you know, he's only been around like, I don't know, he's only been around like a month, and he's already gotten a ton of people on his show. So go check him out. But thanks for watching, everybody. I will not be doing any episodes until Sunday. And Sunday, of course, is the third installment of the Four Horsemen with myself, Eric Jackman, Ryan Dawson, and Dave Smith. So make sure you check into that. That's going to be 8:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday. I might do some like live streams on my phone from my truck or something, but no planned episodes. So stay tuned for that. If you have not subscribed, please subscribe to the channel. And if I ever get a day off where I have some time, I'm going to try to make an audio version of the podcast. And I'm also looking at moving over to PeerTube and Odyssey just to have secondary places to keep my content. But thank you for watching. Go follow Jose on YouTube and Twitter. Jose, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Archaic Skids, DM me if you got the approval from fucking Reed. I'm sure you're good shit.
There you go.